We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report. I'm Blair Andrews, joined as always by Hassan Rahim. Hassan, how's it going?
You know, it's been a mixed Sunday, but I'm really excited about our guest. I mean, man needs no introduction, but you want to give him one?
Definitely. You know him from Legendary Upside, from Ship Chasing, from the top of the Best Ball Mania 3 leaderboard. It's our good friend, Pat Corain. Pat, how's it going?
It's going good. How you guys doing?
We are doing okay. our five-man Penta team looks like it's going to maybe win.
Yeah, we've got, this is a main event team that the five of us draft, the three of us plus Pete Overzet and Ben Gretsch, and we're doing okay in it, right? It's kind of like, which is it? We are good in record and bad in points, or vice versa? Which
yeah. Good in record, bad in points.
Okay. And it looks like we're going to win. So we need to keep winning.
Yeah. We need like 9.5 points from Rashee Rice and Jake Elliott. So,
and he's done. So we need 10 points. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I feel good about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gooden record, bad in points, is a bit of a miracle when you consider that, like, we have Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall as early two picks, right? You're not going to get points out of that, you know?
Well, are you allowing yourself to hope?
That Rodgers comes back? Week 16.
He might do it. I think that's, he's right, game to do it.
Dude, we've been saying it like all season long, but like, just to reiterate, if there's one man who will defy science to its face and to its core, it's like Aaron Rodgers.
I watched a video of this sports doctor whose name I've forgotten, who was talking about it and said basically, like, there's no way he's going to be fully healed by that time, but I think he probably will come back anyway. And like, it's bad idea, but
it's probably a bad idea, you know, relative to, like, if you're just thinking about like his health and stuff, or, and what he would be like versus normal. But like, I don't know if the risk of re-injury, I guess he can't really protect himself as well, 'cause he can't like move around. So he probably shouldn't do it, but purely from Rodgers could wear a boot and I would take him over Zach Wilson. Right. That's not a joke. he could play quarterback in an actual protective boot and I would gladly have him over Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been touching a lot on Zach Wilson and like his EPA per play and just sort of how efficient he's been in terms of where he ranks in terms of your newsletter every week. Right. It's been bad, man. Like, there's only been like a handful of like players who are at that level, right? Like, who sort of are in that same cluster as him. I wanted to get your take.
Essentially, no one who is. Yeah.
Oh my god! Like, not even Bryce Young.
No, he's like worse than Bryce Young. Bryce Young's like dangerously close to Zach Wilson, but he's not.
He's not in the same.
Zach Wilson's in his own tier. The only people that are really with Zach Wilson are like generally quarterbacks who have really low samples. So yeah, they're either like just been crazy inefficient on a low sample, and that'll just sort of naturally come back to the pack, or they just have no business being out on an NFL football field.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's why they're near Zach Wilson.
Right. It seemed like maybe the Jets had seen enough Zach Wilson. They put in Tim Boyle at the end of the game, but maybe that was just because the game was out of reach anyway. So they got to protect.
Yeah, maybe they were protecting him.
I can't lose another quarterback. Can't lose.
I really don't get it. I actually really don't get it, because I think Salah's obviously, I mean, the defense is awesome. He seems like this means nothing, but he just like seems like he'd be like a pretty good coach. Like he seems like he's like a normal dude, like that would communicate effectively and everything. I've monitored the way he talked about the Breece Hall situation really closely, mm-hmm. and felt like he was both being rational, as in, I know what Breece is, but I also know he's coming back from injury, and we're going to basically put a plan in place to help him get back to full health, and then we're going to execute that plan. And that's like exactly what they did, which included signing Dalvin Cook, which people freaked out about. But I was like, trusted Salah to kind of take us where we are now. But I genuinely don't understand the Zach Wilson thing. Like, it is so beyond time to move on. To your point, Hassan, like, I do talk about him every week, because I talk about like every quarterback. Basically, I try to give an overview of, you know, the quarterback play, because it's so important to figure out how these matchups are going to go, in my weekly article. And the thing that's crazy about Zach Wilson is like, there's never any variance to it. It's just week in, week out. His success rate is horrendous. His EPA per play is horrendous. He's usually pretty inaccurate. That bounces around a little bit. It's kind of more noisy week to week, but even there, he's never like spot on. So it's just so consistent. And even with bad quarterbacks, you'll see like spikes, you know, it's just nothing. There's like nothing with Zach Wilson. Anyway, sorry to be so depressing to start things off, but I'm sick of it, man. I'm so sick of it.
No, it's actually a really good point that you're making, right? Because like, when you look at this Jets team, right, this is a very, very good team.
Yeah.
That thought they had a quarterback. They get three snaps out of him, and like, you know, I mean, to the commenter's point, like, you know, can you put a horse tranquilizer in an Achilles? Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's just so such a shame, because could you imagine Garrett Wilson with Aaron Rodgers? Like, you would have him, like, where would he be, right?
It would come down to like somewhat pass volume, because then I think you are talking about like you know, a defensive team, and so maybe we have pass volume a little lower than we'd like. But I mean, I think Garrett Wilson real life is like a top 5-ish. Type of receiver. I mean, he seems like a legit star. So, I mean, I don't know. I think we could be getting like some CeeDee Lamb type weeks out of him.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, this season, all we've gotten out of him is a really frustrating ceiling of what, like 17 points, 18 points, when like you should be looking at like 38 points, 39 points. That's why we were taking him where we were taking him.
Yeah. You know, it's been brutal, man. Like, and Breece Hall, like, Breece Hall had that really nice reception today on a screen pass where he gets, you know, he like sat down right where exactly where you would want him to sit down. And then he like almost before turning around, he was like already like up to speed. Like, he's like shifting his body around and getting all the way up to speed in a way that's just so rare to see. And that he has to do something like that to like have an okay day. Like, if you put him in your starting lineup, like, and he doesn't do something crazy, you're getting like 9 points, you know, and that's with him like dominating touches and just has total control of the backfield. Yeah. Now, like, it's nuts. Like, he's just crushes the value of this team. I don't understand. Like, Salah, you moved on from this guy. You publicly gave up on this guy. There's nothing tying you to him. Just move on. Move on to literally anyone. Sign like 8 backups off the street, like, and have open tryouts. Like, there's no reason not to get something better at quarterback in place. It's just like, I think Salah might, I don't think they'll end up moving on, but it's like, it's crazy enough to where I'm like, if they like fired Salah, I would understand at this point. Like, why have you tied yourself to this dude?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some behind the scenes like meddling with ownership on that side. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Yeah, that's probably.
Because
that's probably the opposite, where he's worried he would get fired if he gave up, because it's such a.
Yeah, if he gave up on Wilson after they spent a high pick. Yeah, right? Because I think the owner is just more like, hey, like, and then that's probably something, that's probably a question worth asking Crack Rock, right? Like, hey, like what is the actual true story?
You should ask Crack Rock, yeah. Because
he would probably know just because like, it's probably like, hey, we understand, like, from a rational ownership perspective, you'd be like, we understand it's a lost year. We just want you to keep playing Zach Wilson. We saw some improvement. We think that he could improve it. The season goes on. Just keep doing it. You know, whatever we get out of him, right? And, like, the issue is for us as, like, fantasy players, is it sucks because we're not going to be able to cash in on these guys this year for being right on what our takes were. And then next year, like, we're not going to get the same price on them. Right, like,
yeah, you're right. It's nothing. So the Breece thing, right? Like, I felt very confident that it's a rare setup, right? Because the reason I was so confident in Breece Hall is because if you look at any of the, like, Twitter physicians, they were all, like, pretty optimistic about his recovery, clean ACL tear. There was, like, minor meniscus damage that didn't seem to require any kind of second surgery or anything. So they were like, this dude should be like 100% by around week 7-ish or even earlier. And the market was like, torn ACL, not messing with that. You don't mess with torn ACL. It had, like, this wisdom to it that was, like, not based. So I was like, I get to bet against overconfidence, basically. And it seems like I'm overconfident, and overconfident is return by betting on him. But I'm actually siding with the medical experts here and I'm taking a discount. I'm taking a guy by the end in, like, the fifth round. Like, we have a ton of Breece in the fifth round of high stakes drafts. So that setup is not coming around again. No fifth round Breece anymore. So that it is quite frustrating, the run out we got on it.
Sorry, Larry, you were saying?
No, I mean, we do have, you know, people in the comments saying they're not going to be paying a high price for guys like Wilson and Breece Hall, in part because I think there's a legitimate concern about Rodgers' skill level when he returns.
Yeah, but that's a personal decision based on your, what, you know, people in the comments portfolio, but, like, that doesn't sway me at all that those guys won't be very, very expensive in drafts. Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is, like, when you look at ADP and stuff, it only takes one person to draft a player. Basically, the whole room has to kind of be worried about a guy for him to fall. So I think Garrett Wilson will be, like, with any kind of quarterback play, he should be a late first round pick, you know?
Yeah.
And Breece Hall will probably be, I mean, honestly, Breece Hall will probably be, like, a top five pick if they have any kind of quarterback situation.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that for Hall. I'm just looking at Wilson's, you know, his profile in the NFL Stat Explorer on RotoViz. He's like, oh yeah,
yeah, you're right. He's more of a mid second that
he hasn't had a wide receiver one game yet this season. I mean, he's been kind of like the opposite of what you expect. He's been consistent, like always around 15 points, sometimes getting 17, 18 until today. Really, we saw the floor, but I think Hassan mentioned he just has no ceiling with Zach Wilson, and I think, like, in reality, he does have,
he's
that
just
ceiling.
hitting his ceiling every week. It's a guy we're watching the guy week. Like put on like a show, and that show is only worth like 13 to 15 points.
Yeah, right.
It's so frustrating because I'm trying to pull up the. our tools aren't working for me because I was trying to pull up the preseason ADP and it sort of goes back to like betting, right? Like we're getting next year, we're going to see exactly how right we were because the market, like to your point, Pat, is going to nicely over, like it's going to draft these guys where they should have been going this year. And we're there early and we're not getting anything out of it. I mean, especially with Breece. I mean, like this is a guy, I mean, like your website.
We still are with Breece though. Like Breece was actually so cheap. That we are still like you'd still like to have drafted Breece in the fourth round, like because that's how cheap he was. He was so cheap that he can actually pay off with Zach Wilson. But can you imagine if he had Aaron Rodgers? I'm so sad. It's, come on,
because you would have someone who would be contending for the like this isn't a hot take like would be contending for the 101 next year with CMC. Like he could have had that like a stretch run where you could you know.
He's, I mean, if you look at like weekly rankings and stuff, he's like it's a top five running back with Zach Wilson, like, you know, this year. Like, so I don't know. Yeah. He would be, I think Jahmyr Gibbs, Cobra Kai's back, put in the chat. I thought that was an interesting one to think through, because depending on how the Montgomery stuff shakes out, you know, like Montgomery, I think will be there, right? But then, I mean, that's probably not enough to get worried about Gibbs in a second year breakout situation. I mean, I think Gibbs will probably be like a top five pick too. We might have a return to some running backs that we're really excited about in the first round. It'll be fun.
That's right.
Yeah,
maybe next year will be fun.
With Gibbs, though, he could have had. They gave a short TD to Montgomery, but they could have just as easily kept Gibbs in there today. I don't know if you guys were watching that game.
It was against the Bears too.
I think that's
what that was at the very end. They probably weren't thinking about it, but yeah.
But like they were like right on like the 1 yard line or whatever, and they just like they typically handed over to Montgomery there. But like Gibbs looked like the more explosive back until they started like just force feeding Montgomery, and they just sort of sidelined Gibbs, which is again frustrating. Because we've seen Gibbs do it without Montgomery in the lineup.
Although I think like one of the reasons that we like drafting guys like Gibbs, like especially like next year, right? Why I will be taking him really high is that it's not that he's definitely going to sideline Montgomery, but if that backfield ends up just like completely going to one of them, we know who it's going to be. Like that's why drafting Breece Hall this year I was so in on, because like Breece Hall The funny thing was this like somehow was like contrarian at one point late in the summer, but like Breece Hall can take Dalvin Cook and shove him to the side. But Dalvin Cook at like 28 years old, having been cut by the team that drafted him and rode him his entire career, will not take a talented second year back and shove him to the side. That like basically never happens. He certainly can be a thorn in his side, and Montgomery could be a thorn in Gibbs's side next year. But I mean, yeah, but Gibbs has a huge upside profile. So I'm not here to FUD Jahmyr Gibbs if you're already preferring him to Breece Hall in 2024 in your minds.
We might as well round it out with the guy who didn't play this week, but who was going in the first round, Bijan. He's not on the show sheet. I'm just I want to get your take on where do you think he's drafted next year? Do you think he's going to stick around in that late first range, or do you think he dips? Do you think that there's enough chance of us getting like a late second on Bijan?
I think almost no chance. Yeah. I would say close to 0% on that. Because, like, I think with one of these things, the way to predict it is if you're – take him down the board in your mind, and where do you start to freak out and get super excited that he's there? Because he's not falling past that. No, it's you're going to take him two spots ahead of that. So that's probably a good idea, right? And the late second is like – well past where I would have started to get excited that he's sitting there. Yeah. I think Arthur Smith is not guaranteed to be back by any means. They don't have a quarterback. They probably will. We'll talk ourselves into someone, right? Like they're going to bring in someone that we're going to be more excited about than we were with Ridder, I would imagine. Plus you have Robinson going into his second year. Tyler Algier has been terrible this year. Cordell Patterson he's already really old and hasn't been anything. So the narrative around Bijan is going to be he is an ascending superstar. He is going to take over this backfield. The competition is a joke. We have better quarterback play and Arthur Smith is gone. And so honestly, I think he'll probably be, I'm saying everyone's a top five pick now, but he strikes me as a top five pick too.
No, I mean, because these are the guys who we're touching on, right? Like these guys all have that like ridiculous, like, 300 plus PPR point, like range of outcomes pretty solidly in like as a top 65th percentile outcome for them, right? Like,
yeah. I don't know. Well, yeah.
65th I mean, might be a little bit too aggressive on my 65th side.
65th was a little low.
But yeah, a little aggressive. But I'm just saying that like if it all breaks right for any of these guys, like that's why they're going to go where they're going, right?
They have 100%. They have the legendary upside as someone
they do. They do. All these guys have legendary upside, like all three of them, plus McCaffrey. I mean, is there anyone I'm missing? Like, those strike me as the top backs in next year's ADP.
Yeah,
I don't know if you would see guys like, I mean, Taylor hasn't done enough this year to get back.
Taylor hasn't done enough. You're going to have to deal with the Anthony Richardson stuff. A lot of his values come in the receiving game, so you're going to be nervous about that.
Right.
But he feels more like an early second round pick type of guy.
Maybe if Achane didn't get hurt again and we're a lot bigger.
He seems like a 2-3 turn type of dude. Maybe late second.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I wanted to get your take on Tony Pollard, who had 12 rushes, 61 yards, and a score. He also had 4 catches for 19 yards. This was his first touchdown since week one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good stuff, but like he was like a, what was like a, going in the early second, right? So, I mean,
by the end, yeah.
Yeah. So he was like
in the first sometimes. Yeah. Late first.
He's got another plus matchup, like when the Cowboys, I think on Thanksgiving, but I wanted to really get your take on a guy like Pollard. Like, where do you think he goes? Like, do you think that we could, you know, do you think he's viable as a hero RB at all? Like, I wanted to get your take.
You're talking next year, ADP?
Next year, and probably what his run out for the rest of the year would be. Like, you're not recouping any losses at this point.
No, I mean, I think he's probably going to be in a somewhat similar role to for the rest of the year, but I'm going increasingly nervous about that because, like, so today I just pulled up on NFL Next Gen. They have these stats that, oh, this is actually for 2022. So for 2023, he's been quite bad in their success rate metric and in rush yards over expected. Today, he was pretty good. He was at 66% success rate, which is like off the charts for like a season long number, but you know, weekly stuff bounces around. He had 18 yards over expected today. That's good. Like he was good today. So that I think is really important for his ability to maintain this like kind of clear lead over the backfield. And so it's probably gave him like a little bit more breathing room from Rico Dowdle. I think he'll probably just kind of keep status quo. I mean, CeeDee Lamb had that quote today or earlier this week about getting Pollard going. And it did make me think like, right, this is a team that's like thinking about how do we win the Super Bowl? So they're like, we've got that Dax going, CeeDee's going, they got Cooks going, you know, they got the tight end going. How do we get the defense is crushing? How do we get our running game where we want our running game to be? Mm-hmm. And Tony Pollard, they got him going a little bit. He didn't have like a massive game, but they're going to look back at the tape today and be like, okay, this works. So I think Pollard's probably going to be in this type of situation, but just over the course of the season, he has not been good. He doesn't really look like he used to, and he hasn't been explosive. Like in all of the numbers, he looks real, real bad. So I don't know. I kind of think I don't really like have a ton of optimism for him to, recapture that kind of magical form that he had early in his career. One of the things that was a red flag for him entering the season was age. You know, you don't think of Tony Pollard as old, but he's 26 years old. So that's already, when I looked at the you know, the idea of the legendary upside and we're looking for these, that comes from an article I wrote a few years ago saying that if we're drafting running backs early, we really ought to be looking at the guys who can kind of break fantasy and put up these massive seasons like Christian McCaffrey is doing this year, where you're getting like 23 plus PPR points per game. And a lot of those seasons are coming from backs 25 years and younger. So as soon as you hit 26 years old, it's already less likely that you're going to be able to kind of like have that absolutely electric skill set that can put you into, you know, just crushing it. And, you know, it helps. Like McCaffrey's obviously older, but he has just an insane workload plus receiving ability that I think is really special. And Pollard was always a bit more of an explosion back with the ability to add on with the receiving. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think he is what – I think maybe he's lost a step, unfortunately, at this point. Although today was a slightly encouraging sign. So I hope I'm wrong.
Pollard giving big Lamar Miller vibes for those of you who remember and celebrate Lamar Miller.
It's also a little Kenyon Drake-ish. Remember when Kenyon Drake finally got the full workload and it went real bad.
Yeah.
Ben Tate has always been the other guy that – yeah. He finally got free from Arian Foster, and it was too late.
Right.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, actually, this is going to be a random question, but Jalen Warren, do you feel like he could be it falls in that mold, or like, do you think that if they were to unleash Jalen Warren, you'd be fine?
I think Jalen Warren would be awesome if they unleashed him. Yeah, like, I think Jalen Warren is one of the best running backs in the league.
Yeah,
I honestly think he is. Like,
he's so fast,
like, he's so good. The thing, it's been cracking me up, there's been I keep seeing the, and I don't even know of like what the purpose of this tweet is. Maybe this tweet isn't fully serious or whatever. I keep seeing the same tweet every week of Najee Harris's breakaway, the number of breakaway runs he's had this year versus Jalen Warren, and it just, like, that's all it is. And it's like, I suppose it's to say Najee Harris is more explosive than Jalen Warren, but it's like, so here's Najee Harris, right, who came into the league with this massive red flag that he's not explosive. That's his big red flag. But we were told, don't worry about that. You don't don't concern yourself with his lack of explosion. It doesn't matter, because he's good at everything else. He's a great receiver. He runs routes. You're going to love watching this guy run routes. Just wait. And he's a bruiser. He's going to smash through the line. He's going to score a bunch of touchdowns. He's going to handle a huge workload. That part was true for a minute. But now we're down to, with Najee Harris, actually, the reason you don't have to care about him being worse at Jalen Warren in every part of being a running back is because he's real explosive now. He's never been before, but now he is. Don't worry, it's not variance. And just seeing Jalen Warren rip off that long touchdown run today gave me a lot of joy, because I don't think that stat's going to hold up again. But, like, if you look at the ESPN's receiver ratings this year, which I really like for running backs, Jalen Warren, he's only RB7 this year.
That's still pretty good when you consider everyone who's touched the ball this year.
Yeah, it's still pretty good. If you look at the last 2 years combined, he's running back 2 behind Christian McCaffrey only. So that's where I'm like, all right, this dude is, like, legitimately flashing as a receiving running back. By the way, over the last 2 years, 3 is Rashad White, 4 is Austin Eckler, 5 is Josh Jacobs.
So it makes sense directionally too.
It makes sense directionally. It's something that I've used I guess starting last year, I started using it because they released it last year. But it's something that I think can help point us in the right direction a little bit. He hasn't been, like, super, 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 super explosive as a rusher over the course of the year, but I think the numbers will improve after this week. And, I mean, just, like, he definitely passes the eye test, and he's a really, really good receiver. So I'm, like, more willing to be like, hey, if you're a really good receiver and the rushing numbers are okay and you, like, have burst, I'm pretty into that. I'll start touting you and saying you're one of the best running backs in the league, and then hopefully prove me right by getting those rushing numbers in place. And I think maybe he's going to prove me right. So,
yeah, he had 9 carries today to Harris's 12. So that's maybe even split than we've seen in the past. But do you think this is enough to get him to overtake Harris?
I don't. I think he's going to just have to keep doing it, and eventually something will crack. But, like, even so, last week, Mike Tomlin commented on how, so Jalen Warren said he had been announced as the starter before the game. And
yeah, I remember that.
I was awesome, right? I was super psyched to hear that. But then Coach Speak Index on Twitter had sent had the clip, which I just love because he puts the clips out so you can actually watch them all. And he also get pretty good context on it as well. But I watched the clip of Mike Tomlin talking about it, and he was saying basically it was like an honor thing. Like he was like, I was honoring this guy's contribution to the team. This is something he's done in the past with like blocking tight ends. Something someone else had pointed out that it's a home game. So, you know, that was like a key part of this. Like he's coming out to the home crowd as an undrafted free agent, announced as a starter. Like that's awesome. And like credit to Mike Tomlin for making that happen. Like that's really cool that he did that. But it doesn't mean what we want it to mean.
Yeah.
And then this week we saw that, you know, he's still not ahead. So I don't know. I mean, Warren is like my highest drafted player in I don't think in Best Ball Mania. I think Brees is, but he's over in my overall portfolio. Warren is my highest drafted player. And as I was kind of going along that journey, I did hear like Mike Tomlin is going to be too stubborn. Like this is never happening. But I was like, dude, I really felt that was an opportunity that is rare to bet on a talent discrepancy that is about as wide as we ever get. And, you know, for the ADPs, like you get one guy like in the early rounds and one guy in the double digit rounds, and the guy in the double digit rounds is like much more talented and it's not close.
Yeah.
And it's a running back where there's a lot of volatility. So I think we're just going to have to, he's just going to have to kind of keep grinding and keep making that more like 55, 45 his way. But you know, if Najee were to miss two games,
yeah,
like it's like he's going to smash in those games. So
yeah.
Just
yeah.
From an offensive scheme perspective, I wanted to get your take, right? Like, cause you know, we were talking earlier about like how you have the cluster of quarterbacks who are bad. Another one who's bad is Kenny Pickett, right? Mm-hmm. But he's not bad when he started getting Jalen Warren. So I was curious if the team could figure out a way to somehow get Warren more and more touches that way, right? Like at least create some layups for a guy who's actually got burst. You know what I mean? Like instead of making those difficult boundary throws to Pickens, and you don't have a safety blanket in Freiermuth over the middle. Like I wonder why they're not trying to like use Jalen Warren more so in the outlet, or figure out a way to get both these guys on the field at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, they should run a little bit more like the Chargers, where they're peppering.
Yeah,
you know, or like the old Panthers. Like they should. I think that's their offense would improve if they actually like leaned on Warren as a receiving running back, in part because that some of those Warren targets would replace Harris or Warren rushes. I mean, Warren's not like an elite rusher. I think he's fine. I think Harris is. I honestly think Harris is also fine. Like he's not a terrible rusher. He's whatever. He's not great. He's kind of below average, but he's not. He's been okay. It's just that like an okay rusher is bad for an offense.
Yeah.
So pull that out and replace it with some additional Warren targets, and it probably would improve the offense a bit.
I mean, you've got you can also take targets away from Allen Robinson or Calvin Austin, and like Calvin Austin didn't get a target today, but like taking away, you know, like Allen Robinson, like what is he bringing you? He doesn't have the same burst. He's kind of not really a like viable threat, right? Like at least you get like a spark plug outlet, like for lack of a better word, right? Like why couldn't like think about the old Kareem Hunt usage in Cleveland with Nick Chubb, right? Like, why not? Why not have him there?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, in some ways, we have that. You know, he kind of is playing like a Kareem Hunt-ish role, or like an Eckler with Melvin Gordon type of role. That's what I think it probably is most reminiscent of.
Yeah, right.
When Melvin Gordon was like,
yeah,
he was on the downhill, and Eckler was on the upward swing, and it seemed kind of nuts to just like hand it over to this UDFA, but like that's where we're headed. That's going to happen. This will be Warren's backfield at some point. I feel very confident about that. The problem is that at some point is probably at the end of next season to where like it's like his backfield.
Yeah.
But, you know, Najee's a bust. He's a bust. First round pick on this guy, like it's no.
Well, not the I was actually going to say a guy who we haven't even had a chance to really for you to really victory lap, Brandon Ayuk. He caught 5 or 6 targets, 156 yards and a touchdown. You mentioned on Ship Chasing that he was your poster boy for this week, and boy, oh boy, did he deliver a career high in receiving yards. And I mean, he came into the game leading the NFL in average yards of separation per route. Yeah, career high. He leads the NFL in average yards of separation per route. He just straight up dominated these guys. So I guess the question here is a little bit twofold in that one, what is Shanahan's issue with like taking an entire year to really give us the Ayuk usage that we wanted? And then two, what is Deebo Samuel's issue in life?
I don't think we should blame Shanahan for this. I think I referenced the receiver ratings for the running backs. I really like open score, and I specifically like open score the most for the receivers. This is all for free at ESPNanalytics.com. Open score, I think, is the most useful when looking at receivers, because like we like already know like so much of the catch and the yak, and like that's like what we do. But like the part of who's actually getting open, and therefore like maybe who are the stats kind of understating a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think open score can really help us there. And Brandon Ayuk is second, and this does not include yet this week, but Brandon Ayuk heading into the week was second in open score behind Keenan Allen, ahead of the 3, 4, and 5 are Garrett Wilson, CeeDee Lamb, and AJ Brown. So yeah, very impressive where he was. That was not who we saw in 2022. He wasn't bad in open score, but he was wide receiver 8, and he wasn't nearly like the raw score wasn't nearly as impressive. So that's like, you know, I think a sign of a guy who's taken a step forward in his actual like skill level. And that's what we heard this summer. He was like a guy that like, you know, some of the summer buzz could be misleading, but I think some of it's pretty helpful. And he was one where like, he's like, dude, Ayuk is it. Like, Ayuk is a number one. That was the narrative all summer out of 49ers camp. Now, we also heard that Deebo was back in shape and texting Kyle Shanahan pictures of his body and stuff. So, you know, there was like Deebo was trying to create the narrative that he's also back. But what we were hearing generally, you know, without people sending pictures was Brandon Ayuk had taken a step forward. And I think that's basically what's happened. I think Brandon Ayuk's taken a step forward, and like, credit to Kyle Shanahan, frankly, for designing his offense with Brandon Ayuk as his primary downfield playmaker. Like, he's the dude who's attacking the deep middle of the field. That's why he was my cover boy this week, because the Buccaneers have been really susceptible to the deep middle, over the deep middle, and they're allowing explosive plays at a really high rate. They were before this week, and they will, you know, this week will not help that in the stats. So, yeah, I think he was just like, it was a perfect matchup for Ayuk, because the way, like, kind of what the Buccaneers are bad at is what Shanahan wants to do. And it's what he specifically has been doing with Ayuk and Kittle, attacking the deep middle. And, you know, I think Ayuk is like, Daigle on DFS MVP, John Daigle referenced a couple weeks ago, like Ayuk's stats against zone, because he's generally regarded as like a man beater, but like, yeah. His stats against zone are also off the charts. And it's like, oh, right, because he's just crushing. Like, it doesn't matter how you split it. He's just absolutely dominating right now.
I mean, man beater is kind of apt, because, like, today what he did to those defenders was just disgusting, dude. Like he really dog walked those guys.
Yeah.
It didn't matter who you had on him.
I know. It was a little unfortunate the Bucks couldn't push back a little more. Yeah. It was about to be an even bigger
game. Dude, it was about to be a ridiculous day.
Yeah, we kind of see this often with San Francisco, where even when they're putting up points, not all their receivers are really doing anything. I mean, even Samuel didn't have a terrible day. 63 yards on 4 targets is not terrible, but not enough for fantasy. Do you think that was largely matchup related, and we might see more of Samuel in the future, or...
I think it's somewhat match related. I mean, I know the zone and man stuff I haven't gotten as deep into, and so I can't really speak on that part of it. Maybe that has something to do with it, but I kind of tend to think about stuff more as like kind of what parts of the field the offense is likely to be looking to attack. And one thing to keep in mind with San Francisco as we move forward is that they have not been protecting Brock Purdy well. And one of the beautiful things about this matchup was that the Buccaneers also don't have a very good pass rush.
Right.
So it's like you're susceptible to big plays. You can be beat over the middle of the field and you don't get to the passer. Like that's going to suck for you when you're playing San Francisco. Like that's a horrible, horrible place to be in to have San Francisco as the next team on your schedule. I think with, you know, teams that can get to Purdy, right? The other thing about the Bucs is they also blitz a lot and kind of suck at it. So it's like, it's perfect too, because Purdy gets blitzed all the time and he's good against the blitz. But anyway, for teams that can, you know, blitz more effectively or have a really good pass rush, I think that's a spot where we could see more Samuel, you know, and it's a less interesting spot for Ayuk because Ayuk's more of the downfield guy, much deeper ADOT. Samuel gets used on some of those more designs, touches around the line of scrimmage, rushes, obviously. Just generally, his ADOT's much more shallow. So, you know, if it's more of like a quick passing game type of game plan, I think we'll see Samuel like really, you know, kind of bounce back. I do view this as pretty matchup.
It was also interesting that like Kittle was heavily efficient. I mean, he had the most, he led the team in targets, 9. He caught 8 of them for 89 yards and a score, right? Like, that's also going to reduce the need to go back to Ayuk. Just highly efficient there. I mean, to be fair, like, I didn't think they had anyone who could have matched up with Kittle physically. Like Kittle, when he's actually going like and rolling the way he does, like he pops off the screen because he's so much bigger than the safeties they put on him and the cornerbacks that they put on him. And it's just like, yeah, like, you know, like he, it's not like, like you always forget how physically intimidating he can be. And it's been a while since I've had a chance to actually watch Kittle, like a proper Kittle explosion like this one. Just because I knew it was coming because we were facing him in our MA teams. It was like, oh, it's just great. Like, we're not going to, like, like we don't, like, in a TE premium, he's obviously going to drop, like, a fantastic game against us. But, yeah, it's volume concerns aside, like, how much do you think CMC cannibalizes Debo? Like, just out of curiosity. Like, because they kind of occupy similar facets of the field. So I was curious what your thoughts were over there as to, and like, do you think, as a follow-up, like, where do you think Debo goes next year? Because I'd be curious to see his price.
I think Debo probably goes in the kind of 5th round.
Yeah.
Like, he probably flips with Ayuk probably goes higher than Debo was going. Yeah. But I think we're always going to have
a 3rd rounder or a fucking early 4th. Yeah. You think he's going to be a 2nd rounder, Ayuk?
I think he'd probably be a 2-3 turn guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so hard. Like, when Debo was going 2 years ago, Debo was a late 2nd round pick.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so I think that Ayuk might go there. If he keeps this up, I think that's where he'll go. Maybe he cools off significantly and he goes more kind of like where T. Higgins was going.
Or maybe even takes over where Jalen Waddle would be, right? Mid-2nd then.
Well, I think he'd have to really crush to go there. Because I do think with Kittle, you're always going to be battling the we can't project this being a good pick stuff.
Yeah.
You know, which is valid to some extent. Like, the 49ers are always, like, you're going to have to eat some bad weeks with, like, even this year, right? Like, Ayuk will cool off and have some really bad weeks going forward. It's just that he gives you access to some really strong weeks too, because this offense is super efficient and he's really good. And so it's like sort of a tough question of like, how many 49ers is too many 49ers, and can these guys get there all together? And they're all overpriced, and like, yeah, they all should be overpriced for like a season long projection, because they're going to crush in specific weeks, and that's how this game is scored. But it does. I don't know. It's always going to feel like a little bit. I never expect to feel comfy taking 49ers, because I think the market actually does a pretty good job of being like, these dudes are going to be super efficient, and I want them.
Yeah.
Another guy.
I was going to move on to another guy who's super efficient. Maybe a surprise to a lot of us. Tank Dell caught 8 of 10 targets for 149 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, Noah Brown obviously missed this game. He's kind of been CJ Stroud's go-to guy over the last 2 weeks, but Tank Dell not missing a beat. I guess my question about Dell is he legit? Is he, yeah, someone who's going to be rising up draft boards as well?
Yeah, I mean, so I stopped at the top five of open score. Number six is Tank Dell. He's been really, really good. I was really disappointed, just, you know, kind of how popular he was today in DFS. I ended up not playing him in most of my lineups. I ran four lineups. I had him in one. And I really wanted to just like eat the chalk and play him everywhere. He's been so good. Stroud did ask them to draft this guy, you know, and the other thing about, you know, that's always nice is we kind of look forward to next year and what, you know, they're probably going to bring in a receiver, right? And they're going to, you know, that'll kind of shake things up a little bit. Maybe we won't be as excited about Dell or whatever. They would be smart to continue to add weapons here. I mean, Stroud, they have it. They have the quarterback. So build around him, please. But I do think Dell is legit. I think Dell's, because the other thing about Dell is that he had a good college profile. It's just that he was really small. And I mean, I still have a little bit of bias against the small guys, and not just from the old Rotoviz days, but from like Tutu Atwell. Like Tutu Atwell had an awesome college profile, and he was just like really, really tiny. And it's like there is, I think, a threshold below which you're probably not. It's not that you won't be good. Like it's not going to translate like it'll translate for wide receivers who are sufficiently big. But maybe we're just continually lowering what that threshold is, the way the NFL is kind of moving. And right. Tank Dell, I think, pretty definitively, you know, we should be ignoring like the size concerns at this point and looking at his, like, kind of re-looking at his college profile. He had a 36% dominator rating in 2021, 38% in 2022, 34% for his career. I believe it was an early declare, right?
Yep.
I don't think so.
Let me check. There might have been a reason why he wasn't. If he wasn't, there must be a reason why he wasn't. I think
his size is probably a good reason why he wouldn't have been. But
now he's pretty old. Yeah, he's 24 years
he's
old.
He's a fifth year.
He might have been fifth year. Was he? Maybe not a JUCO guy, but.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah. No, he kicked around a bit. I mean, like, he kicked around a bit, but like the big thing I think for him is also like he has a lot of
mismarked in my stuff as an early declare. If he wants a JUCO, I need to go double check that.
Yeah, I mean, because he did have like he had 3 years before he went to Houston, right? And even at Houston, it took him like 1 or 2 years to get like fully established. One of the things about like
anyway, that's a good profile for a fifth year guy though. Like to have the 34%. Dominator rating is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there's got to be a story behind why he was kicking around, right? Like a different, because this is sort of where like analysts should make their money. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, you have to be able to take a stand. You can't just say, oh, his prospect profile is like, he's too small. Like, it doesn't make sense, right? I think John Moore had done a lot of good work on figuring out what undersized receivers are worth it and how to figure that part out.
I mean, there is an interesting thing where you see these guys who are JUCO transfers or who, transfer at all and then end up, you know, playing as seniors. And it doesn't seem to hurt those guys in the same way quite as much. Ayuk was the same situation. There are some mitigating circumstances, I think, to the early declare stuff, and transferring from a smaller school or playing at a smaller school seems to be one of them.
I wonder if he took time off because
he
might have taken 2 years off.
CFR has him as like a true junior.
Yeah, because I pulled up on 24/7. He committed to FIU. But then I don't think he ever played there. And then he ended up 2 years later, but he didn't. So he enrolled signed a letter of intent in December 2019 with Houston.
No, he played 1 year at Alabama A&M and then transferred to Independence Community College and played one year there and then transferred to Houston in 2020.
Okay. So it was a junior college situation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He was, yeah, but like that's, yeah, and historical anomalies makes a good point, right? Like there is like a, there is a COVID year aspect because he started in Houston in 2020, and then he gets. I mean, he's just going to be. It's hard to say, but like this is going to be the type of profile where every, like we're just going to fail, like from an from like a macro perspective, and then like this is just, it's tough, you know.
Maybe I mean. There are a lot of aspects of Dell's profile that were really attractive, like Pat was saying. Not only did he have all the kind of market share numbers we like, he was also one of the most efficient players when you look at kind of the advanced stats. You know, one of the reasons I really liked Jalin Hyatt this year was because of how efficient he was and how effective he was in terms of, you know, like EPA stuff. And Dell was basically just as good, if not better, in a lot of those metrics. But I think probably because he was small and old, I kind of ignored him.
Yeah, and I think so. One thing I would say that I've really enjoyed from, you know, as someone who like I started getting into the prospect stuff because I was really into Dynasty. One thing that I like about kind of the environment that we're in now is that I had like way more Tank Dell in best ball than I did in Dynasty. Like in Dynasty wasn't really even that on my radar because I was like, what's the payoff? Like it's 100, this dude's 165 pounds. You know, obviously all this stuff is wrong, right? He's 5'8", he's 165 pounds. He's like, you know, fine prospect, not like so great that I'm going to be like overlooking these red flags. Also, he's a third round pick, you know, which is some draft capital, but not a ton. He's on the Texans, you know, they got this rookie quarterback, Stroud. Stroud will be fine. He's not going to be great. And so it's like, what's the payoff?
Yeah.
But in best ball, the payoff is this dude has two good weeks and they're at the end of the season, right? Because as a rookie wide receiver, he's most likely to do that at the end of the week, at the end of the year. They'll probably, this team doesn't really have any wide receivers. Like Nico Collins is, you know, also like a third round pick. This regime isn't tied to. They got Robert Woods is kind of tail end of his career. They got like John Metchie, who knows what that is. You know, like they need to figure out.
Free agent was Dalton Schultz.
Yes, they need to assess. They need to assess what they have as they move forward with building out this depth chart. And so Dell actually profiled in best ball as the type of guy who is like pretty likely to see playing time, regardless of how good he was.
Yeah.
And I think like that's what I want to kind of keep doing. I think it's more important to have an open mind in best ball or like the situation that you're trying to keep an open mind to is like actually pretty different than the situation you're trying to picture in Dynasty. Or in Dynasty, you're like, I need this dude to like emerge as a superstar, which Dell kind of is maybe doing. But but in best ball, like you're like, hey, I just need this like offense to take
over. Yeah.
This dude. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, and then you get outsized gains if they take a look at him and he's awesome. So I feel really good that I have a lot. I don't have like a ton of Dell, but I feel pretty good about my Dell exposure overall. Dell being good is making me happy. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Another rookie I wanted to get your take on, Puka Nacua. He caught 5 of 7 targets for 70 yards in the Rams' week 11 win over the Seahawks. He didn't catch his first pass until there were like 6 seconds left in the first half. It was a big one. It was like the Rams' first touchdown, and he saw 6 of his 7 targets in the second half following Cooper Kupp leaving with an ankle injury. Unfortunately, we don't know anything regarding Cooper Kupp's status, but I wanted to get, you know, your take here on Nacua sort of rest of season and dynasty value.
Yeah, I think this is probably a good time to maybe go try. Well, not if Kupp is hurt again, I guess, but like, This is probably like a good time to try and go get Nacua in Dynasty. Cause I think when I was trying to think through Nacua when he was like crushing earlier and kind of coming out of nowhere, it was sort of this the same thought process that I used back when Terry McLaurin emerged, where there's like kind of this thing that happens where after the season, we're going to just take all of the context that we've been like deep in the weeds on and like forget about it. And we're just going to look at the kind of the what happened at like baseline, like, or like the basically the box score. What did, how many, what points per game did this guy have? I mean, you know, like, what did this dude do? So whatever Puka Nacua has done is essentially like banked value for Dynasty and like redraft ADP next year. Like, he's going to have a pretty high season long stat line because he was so good early in the season. Like, that's just kind of already like almost guaranteed. He'd have to completely disappear for that not to happen. So his floor on his value is like pretty high because he's a second year player who's going to have a really good rookie season. You know, Cooper Kupp's going to be another year older and have had come off an injury plagued season. I don't know what's going to happen at quarterback. That's obviously a major concern. McVay retiring or something would be a disaster, but that's, you know, that's risk that I'm willing to take on if I can get Nacua like a reasonable price right now. While it almost seems like he's almost like kind of boring, as long as Kupp's healthy, he kind of became like a little bit more. Mm-hmm. More boring. He's not like emerging into like true. He didn't take another step forward into like, oh, he's the number one there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't think he ever, like, I don't think he profiles as one who will, right? It is interesting though for a guy like this. I mean, again, someone who's older, he's also a transfer, right? Like, he really, and he never broke out in college. Like, that's the big thing. Like, he never had like a dominator above 30%. He never crossed the threshold that we're looking for.
Right.
Like his best season was 805 yards.
Which year was that?
Like 2021. That's is following his like transfer from Washington.
Okay, interesting.
Junior season.
Yeah, it's such a weird career because wasn't he fairly COVID like affected in terms of moving?
Yeah, yeah, he did transfer stuff during COVID, and he also, I think, was injured this season right before he transferred, so it was shorter for that reason as well. I can't exactly remember.
He did have – so he had all right, so this starts 2019. He had 4.42 yards per route run at Washington, then 2.60, which is still very good. It's not nearly as good as, like, in college, all the yards per route runs are much higher, but that's, like, still pretty good. And then 3.44 and 3.53 to close out his 2 years at BYU. So the yards per hour run, I think, is probably the signal with Nacua that I've been now really burned by two different fourth round picks in best ball, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Nacua. And I just need to get my head out of my ass on that. Like, if the dude is slotted for immediate opportunity, then a fourth round pick's like the same as a third round pick. Like, I just need, because if you look at like historical stuff, fourth round pick isn't always very, you don't love to see that, but
clearly
fourth round picks can have a pretty big impact.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just I just think it's teams who, there's like a flaw in their scouting process. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, he definitely fell through the cracks.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like, also like the issue with this year was like the distribution was like, if you take a bell curve and then just inverse it, like, or like flip it around, right? Like, you have like all these guys going in the first and early second round, and then it's like a whole bunch of junk, and then like all these guys are going to the back end, right? Like, it's and then I didn't get on Puka at all in best. I think my portfolio is like 4 or 5% Puka, but I have in a few dynasty leagues. I took in like the late third, early fourth round, because again, like, a lot of people ignored him because they were like, ah, this guy, you know, like, fifth rounder on the Rams, who knows with Stafford and his thumb, where is he going to get playing time behind, you know, Kupp and Higbee and all the other guys. And I was like, my team's, all my old wide receivers are dying, so I'm just going to take this guy and hope something works out, right? Yeah.
Hey, who's a fifth rounder? I mistakenly thought he was a fourth rounder, but I guess what it was, that the Rams, when the Rams take a dude, I just like move them up around since they never have a first rounder.
Yeah. Kevin Tompkins makes a good note. Before Amon-Ra St. Brown, the best fourth round pick was like Jamison Crowder and Gabe Davis. I mean, like, yeah, like we can say what we want about like scouting, but like the NFL has this wide receiver pick to like pretty much a science in most places, and I guess whatever QJ.
Well, Diggs was a fifth rounder, and
Diggs was
Antonio Brown was a sixth rounder.
Yeah, I think Stephon Diggs fell that late because he was like they placed almost over index on his like character concerns, right?
I don't actually know why. That's interesting.
Did he ask to be traded from Maryland? Is that what, did his brother ask?
No. So I remember he had like an absolute freak out like during one of the Big Ten games. I think it was against Penn State or something. Yeah.
Right.
He was like kind of a sore loser, I think. And he was like a five-star prospect. He was like he was a five-star recruit ranked as like the best, second best wide receiver in the nation. And like here he is going in like the fifth round, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. Crazy.
But even like, with Diggs, like what did Diggs do in his rookie season? Because it's been kind of amazing. I mean, and Antonio Brown, like he took years to emerge into something. He was like very that's quiet true. Start to his career.
That's Diggs true. Was solid.
Diggs was solid as a rookie, but I don't think he really had a breakout year until year two or maybe even year three.
Three.
Yeah, I think he was – let me see. I'll pull it up. He had 746 yards and four touchdowns as a rookie. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, these but days wasn't that, like, would, that would make him a fourth rounder in the next draft.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of truly broke out in his third season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Brown was a little slower to break out as well. So it is surprising to see these guys like St. Brown and like Nacua, who are late round picks, getting. I mean, even St. Brown didn't really do it until the end of his rookie season.
Right, that's true. And but Nacua, when he did it.
Yeah,
it was for real. So good. Yeah,
and Nacua, you know, right out of the gate. I mean, if Kupp is hurt for several games, I guess you would expect them to go back to that. 15 targets to Nacua game plan. And I mean, how high is he getting drafted next year?
Man, he is such a tough one. So what's the situation? Like, is it basically status quo? Stafford comes back, Kupp's there. I mean, I think we're talking Kupp is a late
there, but first. Kupp is coming off an injury riddled season at age, what, 31 now? 32?
I think he'll be 31.
31.
He is 30 years old now. He turns 31 in June.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he'll be an early second round pick in the Davante Adams zone.
Yeah, right.
And then Puka will be like at the 2-3 turn.
Yeah.
He'll be the Higgins.
I have a
he could even be the Waddle.
He could be the Waddle.
Yeah.
The Reek Waddle. Yeah, the I have this like bad feeling like with the Rams' offense, right? Like, is like Stafford suffered the UCL injury yet again. I mean, it's a miracle they won this game.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If they, I'm kind of thinking like we feel okay about Stafford, but if we don't, then
right,
then he can fall a few rounds.
Right. Yeah, but I think we're just like no, but like assuming full health and everything. Yeah, like you're right. Like you could see this being the arbitrage. I don't know, man. I don't think it's arbitrage, but like if Kupp goes late, like early second, then like Nacua definitely 2-3 turn type of thing, like you were saying.
Well, it's funny, like because you think about him versus Waddle, and it feels a little weird to be like, oh, he'd go ahead of Waddle, but
yeah.
Who would you like rather play most weeks in DFS, Puka or Waddle? Like you're most players be like, oh, like at the same salary, I'm definitely playing Puka. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like most, I mean, it's not as comfortable as it used to be, but like it's anyway. Yeah. I think he'll go pretty high.
Yeah. There's a good question in the chat. Puka or Dank rest of season?
Puka.
Yeah, Puka. Right.
I mean, Tank's really good, but they're going to spread it around a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, like if Noah Brown comes back, I mean, like that, like Noah Brown was a guy we were discussing because he's also like he's a seventh rounder from Ohio State and just hasn't done anything, but he's got these like bizarro spike weeks in him out of nowhere, and like they just such a flat target share over there.
He is a early declare who's been able to stick in the league despite you know, not really having a ton of opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, there's some reasons for thinking he might legitimately be good.
So the thing that really kind of sucks for the Texans now is that, so next week they get the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Jaguars have a good defense. That's obviously not ideal, but the Jaguars can also push them, which is nice. Then they get the Broncos, who have been increasingly conservative and run heavy. You can also run on the Broncos. So that makes me nervous that they're not going to be pushed. And the Texans are fundamentally a run-first team.
Yeah.
Like that's who they are. Like that's who they want to be. That's how they game plan. So you need someone to push them to really get the like super fun stuff. And then they get the Jets after the Broncos. Remember we were promised how fun this was going to be for Derrick Henry, but we get the Titans, the Browns, and the Titans, which actually looks pretty awful to me because the Titans aren't going to push them. Now you can pass on the Titans. I'm not, for efficiency purposes, it'll be pretty good, but it's not a very exciting close of the season for the Texans. If you look at like, what's the likelihood of them getting into shootouts the rest of the way? Probably the Jaguars is your best bet.
Yeah. The Texans' defense is also, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, they're not as terrible as we think they are. Like, they're actually more than capable of curbing. I mean, like,
they have a good pass rush.
Yeah. Like we were expecting a little bit more fireworks from the Cardinals Texans game than we got. Right. Like, there's like something to be said for, you know, Greg Dortch emerging as the Cardinals' leading. Like, I don't know what it is, but with Kyler Murray under center, like Greg Dortch is just the man. Any worries about like Smokey, like Hollywood Brown, like two for 18 on 5 targets?
Yeah, you don't love that. I was kind of shocked when I saw the start of that game and just a bomb, a wide open wide receiver downfield, and it's the Rondale Moore. I was literally like, when I saw the 4 instead of 2, I was like, what? Like, how is this possible? I mean, it's definitely a bit of a bummer for Marquise Brown the last couple of weeks, but I'm not like overly concerned because Kyler looks pretty good. And, you know, he's out there a lot and he's still pretty good. But I guess it's been a bit of a bummer because there was part of you felt like maybe he could just emerge as like a true wide receiver one, you know, with Kyler back. And I think he'll have his moments though. I don't, you know, he's fine. He kind of is what he is.
How concerned are you about this offense? I mean, even with Kyler back and looking pretty good, there's kind of a pretty apparent lack of receiving weapons when you're talking about Greg Dortch as the top target getter. I mean, I'm the biggest Greg Dortch fan I know of, and even I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, so this offense was able to kind of put together some weeks with Josh Dobbs, mm-hmm. which honestly is maybe less impressive than I thought it was at the time because Josh Dobbs now doing well in Minnesota. But let me see, what's their schedule the rest of the way? Because this was, yeah. I felt like the thing with this game was that we needed kind of Kyler to push this into being really fun. And I guess really that was kind of wrong because if Stroud just does, you know, takes care of the ball a little bit better, it would have been more fun there. But they get the Rams next week. The Rams are kind of a run funnel, but you can pass on them. Then they get the Steelers, who have a good pass rush. So, yeah, then they get the bye week, and maybe coming out of the bye, they'd be a little more effective. The Week 16 game against Chicago, that could be fun. Mm-hmm. That could be very fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, they have Michael Wilson as their kind of clear outside deep threat, who's like a better version of Alec Pierce, I guess. He's nothing special at all. Rondale's getting a little bit more involved, obviously, this week with Wilson out. Trey McBride seems pretty legit to me.
He's getting
a lot of usage and he's been good. So I think they have a little bit of a weapon there. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a team that probably should have DeAndre Hopkins on it. So their weapons aren't great.
It's a real shame because like with Levis, like it's cool to see Levis at least get some opportunity. It's when you watch Levis play, it's fucking terrible, man. like he had like it's almost like his first game as like a true rookie was like, this is it, boy, it's just gonna get worse from here. And he just got like the bottom fell out, like dude, like that's like the quarterback rug pull of the year, you know what I mean?
It's so funny. Well, even in the advanced stats though, like his success rate in that game, first game was really bad.
Yeah, and I remember that.
You know, I listened to Kevin Cole's breakdown on that game, and he's basically like saying, like, you know, there's a lot of negative EPA here too, in addition to the positive EPA, like, because he basically was getting to like a sort of a neutral EPA, but it's like, hang on, you're at neutral EPA, and you, like, all I saw was you throwing super long touchdowns to DeAndre Hopkins. Like, what were you doing that wasn't that? Yeah. It must have been horrible. So then we've seen more of that. We did get another long touchdown to DeAndre though. So, you
know, we also saw a pick six today with an old lineman getting in there.
Oh, did we? I didn't see that.
We got Jeffrey Simmons got a 2-yard touchdown, a defensive tackle.
Oh, I did. Yeah, okay. I was like, those moments where I was watching Red Zone and they like showed that. I was like, what did I just see?
Yeah, no, like, and they just didn't show it again. Like that was
it. Yes. It didn't register. I was like,
what? Like, hang on, hold the phone, Scott Hansen. Nope, he's like off and running. And it's like, ah.
It was sort of like a plot hole in a movie I'm enjoying where I was just like, I'm just not going to think about that. I'll enjoy this more if I don't analyze what I just saw.
Yeah, just, I mean, but that's, it's like, this is like why you got to read like Blair's matchup column and pass like legendary upside. Like I've been using all your work for like betting. And today I had a bunch of like, I was pottering around too much right before like the games went live, and I had like 8 winners, like legit, like when I would like, cause I like making notes and I like putting them up, and they're like 8 bets that I had, like I didn't hit on like the 3 Ayuk overs I wanted to put in, and I didn't hit on the Tank Dell longest wreck that I wanted. There were a couple of others that I'm not forgetting.
Wait, so you're telling me you had a bunch of winners that you never placed?
Yeah, like I just forgot. Like they just like got like afterwards, like the slip just becomes like remove pick and continue. And like, cause like it went from being pre-game to like to going to live. And then like when it was live, I'm like, maybe not. Like, you know, cause like don't know if it makes sense like to like just try and chase this shit when it's like going live, because it's almost impossible to get live lines when you're just betting props.
Mm.
So it's like, cause like I like putting them in the way I do it is I make notes, right? And then I go through, on my phone or my betting on my thing, and I put them all in my queue, and then I double check with everything that I've got, like your work, Blair's work, my own research as well. Then I eventually put all the bets in, and then I just lost time today.
Ah, oh, man.
Yeah,
but like it just goes to show that like reading your work is just going to make people better at what they're doing. Like,
appreciate that, man. Yeah, today was a fun one because. The cover boy thing, like I always have to, you know, I always like picking a player, and sometimes I'm like pretty close between a couple, and then I pick one, I'm like, wish I picked the other one. And then today was a fun one where I was like, there were a few. I really liked the game everyone else liked. There was nothing contrarian in the walkthrough about how you can't play the Houston game. The Houston game looked great to me. I actually,
I had it. You're up Tank Dell, and that's what got me on Dell this week.
Yep. But I was glad that I ended up going with Ayuk. Like, as soon as Ayuk was like, okay, he's going to have at least a good game, I was like super glad, because it's always more fun if it can be a player who's not like the player everybody's going to be on that week. So that was fun.
Out of curiosity, here's a really tough question. Trade JT and Chase for Keenan Allen.
Jamar Chase?
Yeah, with Jake Browning's now under center.
So I assume this is redraft?
Yeah, I think this is all redraft. I wouldn't do any of this for Dynasty, right?
I mean, it can't be for Dynasty.
Yeah.
It's a no for Dynasty. Man, I'm not in like basically any redraft leagues where I can trade.
Yeah.
But
yeah, redraft is.
I think I would do that. Would you guys do that?
I think it depends on your running back situation, right? Because like we all build teams similarly to where
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, because you kind of like losing.
It's a running back that you're losing here, and like he's going to
basically trading Chase like he's a throw-in, which you just shouldn't do.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Don't do that.
It's also you're moving two kind of valuable guys and consolidating that into one guy who's playing better now. But it should be higher than Keenan.
I know Keenan's awesome, but it should be like a true. It should be for like. I mean, you can't get McCaffrey doing that, but
yeah,
right. No,
yeah.
But could you get like some form of like Breece plus Ayuk or some shit like that?
Well, go to the AJ Brown guy yeah. and see if you can get Brown that. Plus a little bring back sweetener thing.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd rather just have Brown, and then maybe you can get like some other little piece that you like.
How about this? I mean, we're not gonna talk about it much, but the borrow to Jake Browning is just man, what like that, like in your perspective from a best ball standpoint, like our Cincinnati roster is just completely DOA now. Like if it wasn't for T. Higgins just being an absolute black hole, right? What's going on here?
Even more Joe Mixon.
I don't know. I mean, it is tough because like Browning came in and looked terrible. We're like we get the gut punch that Burrow's out. And so it's hard not to be really pessimistic. But you know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson like looked pretty good today. Even though he looked terrible when he came in. Aiden O'Connell's been
Aiden O'Connell
kind of okay. Even though remember the first time I saw Aiden O'Connell, he was like horrible coming in for Jimmy Garoppolo, and then they end up going, do I have that right? I can't remember.
They did start Hoyer one game.
They first started Warrior one game. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. But it's helpful to get a full week of practice. So
he has A.J. Brown.
Good for you, man.
The issue there is like losing. I think JT for Keenan is a fairly viable split. I don't like the idea of treating Chase like a throw-in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
he said, what about Waddle and Chase for Keenan?
Sure. I mean, that actually is pretty good as someone who has been drafting Waddle fairly high. This is an ADP take I wanted to get your take on. Like with like the guys who were going as a wide receiver twos in the second round, right? Like Higgins, Waddle, Devonta Smith. Where do you think they go next year? And do you think they just sort of replaced by guys like Puka Nacua, Tank Dell? Like what do you think happens here? And like is there Like, what is the big lesson to take away here? I guess is like, what would you rather have, like an RB in the like instead of taking a wide receiver two on these perceived offenses? Like, what are you doing with this going forward?
So, yeah, I think that they will probably fall. Like Devontae Smith will probably fall into the fourth, fifth, sixth kind of range, and we'll probably see, like, you know, where you're like, man, I really need another wide receiver here. And it's like, well, I think Devontae Smith, he's on the Eagles. That's pretty good. I could talk myself back into this. Kind of how strong he closes the season is like, are you talking yourself into him in the sixth round or the fourth round? I don't think he'll fall to the seventh. But, like, Gabe Davis, we got back into the sixth. Like, if Gabe Davis was back into the sixth, like, I think Devontae Smith would probably be in the fifth. So, yeah, I think he'll be there. I think Higgins will probably he might be a bit higher than that because we're maybe the fourth. Because we generally, I think we're less concerned about the season as far as it reflects on his talent. It's been more like an injury situation. Still has that like spike week upside. And then Waddle. I don't know. I mean, Waddle's tough. Waddle, I think, may be able to close the season strong enough to where he could still kind of be like a 3-4 turn guy. I mean, he goes there, maybe mid third.
Mm, yeah.
Oh god,
I wonder
Waddle again at that price.
Yeah. What do you guys think? What are you taking the over under on those prices?
I think on my perspective, like from what we know sitting here today, I think you're spot on, man. Like how late do you, like just taking Waddle as a microcosm. How far do you want any of these guys really to go? Because they're all on such elite offenses that, right. Like, you really, it's not even about contingency upside. It's the fact that the scoring pie is so big that you want a piece of it.
Right.
Like today with Waddle, like with Hill out, like we saw three straight targets to him. He caught them all for like, he's what, 52 yards or something. Like, you know, like, and that's just one of them, right? Like with Higgins out, like Chase is crushed, right? And the rest of the offense with Burrow under center also does really well. Like Tanner Hudson was a thing, right? Like, you know, like Trenton Irwin, like all these like late round dart throws show up with like Burrow under center as like viable like dart candidates in your best ball portfolio. Boyd also was like a bit of a smash. He was almost he's kind of categorically undervalued with where T. Higgins was going. T. Higgins has been the disappointment, and Devonta Smith, like Devonta Smith without Goddard is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there could be a narrative that we can't be drafting wide receiver twos, you know, going forward. I don't know. I mean, maybe that'll hurt Jordan Addison. Maybe Jordan Addison ends up being really cheap next year because don't you know, you can't take the wide receiver two on a team because the other guy will just eat everything. Maybe that'll hurt Puka. Maybe Puka actually goes later because Cup. Although probably not, because people will say, well, Puka's going to take the job over in a second year. But yeah, I mean, I generally think like if you're taking guys in the second round, you would prefer them to be candidates to like break out. Like 2022's second year wide receivers or 2021's were more fun because those guys were like CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson and stuff in 2021. Right. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what you want. You want guys who are like breakout candidates to take over their. I mean, Chris Olave would have been kind of, even though it wasn't the best situation and he's not really doing it, that's like more the typical guy we would prefer to be taking in that late second round range. So I suspect that archetype finds their way there. And then some of these kind of number twos on their own team, because I mean, that's essentially what like Devontae Smith is, like a failed 1A bet, right? Yeah. It's like you were kind of hoping he's like actually – you know, there's all this stuff of like, actually, if you take away week one of last year, like of 2022, then he's even with AJ Brown and targets. Yeah. This dude's just as good as AJ Brown. And then this year has been a reminder that like he is not. But,
dude, you know, many people are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
2 years ago. Oh, sorry.
No, it's just kind of interesting thinking about how, you know, what the narrative was going into this offseason, where you get these guys who are wide receiver twos on the same team as guys going in the first round, and still we're okay taking them in the second round. And what's different about this year? Like, are we seeing a lot less? I don't know. Fewer teams that can support two alpha wide receivers in this season. And is that something we expect to stick, or am I looking for?
Well, I mean, if you just look at this, the specific situations, right? Mm-hmm. We have T, who's been kind of banged up, and then Burrow was banged up, and I think he might have been fine. Like, I think T Higgins might have been like a fine pick, and we just never got the payoff on it. But I don't feel like he almost like shouldn't be a part of this narrative. But then when you look at Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith, like those two were like very clearly overdrafted relative when you think of it through the lens of like how close in talent they are to their teammate. And some of that information we are getting this year of like, you know, AJ Brown versus Devontae Smith is like not nearly as close as it was made out to be. I think there was some evidence of that entering the year, but even I didn't feel as strongly as I do now about the talent discrepancy there. But like, when you have a wide receiver who's dominating targets as thoroughly as AJ Brown is, then there is no such thing as a 1B in that team. Like there's like barely a two. Like he's taken away so much of the pie. That is unexpected. Like I liked AJ Brown. I took a lot of AJ Brown.
Yeah.
Had him over Diggs in my ranks for most of the summer. I didn't think this would happen. This is like, this is awesome for AJ Brown. Like, this is like kind of like, this feels like 98th percentile type of stuff. Like this is sweet, but you know, it's tough because if this type of outcome happens and you're betting on the 1B side, you're gonna get crushed. Tyreek is the same thing, where we it was more predictable with Tyreek because he's basically just in the same role he was last year. But I thought maybe this year things would sort of swing a little bit more towards Waddle. And if anything, they've kind of swung even more toward Tyreek, which it seems impossible. So,
yeah. I mean, what's so
interesting. And the running backs.
Yeah, that's for the running backs. With the, I mean, yeah, with the Dolphins, you did have like a glimpse last year of healthy Tua, both Waddle and Hill just crushing it and being, you know, worth their, you know, those picks, even if they both stay healthy. You're just making a bet on the Dolphins offense. And even though the offense has been good, it's been run in I guess a different way than we expected. So yeah,
they're not airing it out as much as you think they would be for the kind of points that Tyreek is putting up, right? Like
Tyreek's just everything.
Yeah.
He's just hyper efficient, right? Like Waddle had 8 targets, 4 catches, 55 yards, respectable line, right? Tyreek had like 11 targets, 10 catches, 146 yards and a score. Like that's nuts. And then the rest of the offense is like Robbie Chosen, 2 targets. Salvon Ahmed, 3 targets. Cedric Wilson, 4 targets. Right? Like all the little leeches are taking it away. And like it goes back to your point about talent discrepancy. Like Hill on like a handful more targets is so much more productive and so much more efficient than his running mate that like it doesn't make sense for them to bump up Waddle's workload.
No, it doesn't. Like, there's no reason that they should be. Yeah. And I think maybe some of this is like based on the way defenses are trying to take away stuff. And you almost kind of have to like these Shanahan offenses in particular are kind of like scheming things like maybe even more, you know, like especially Mike McDaniel with the Waddle motion stuff. And but also just like the Tyreek Hill motion stuff, not Waddle, which is the whole point. I think it was John Boyce had a tweet where he's like, Tyreek Hill is the world's slowest teleporter. Like you can actually see him. You can see him teleporting, but like work on that, dude. But it is, he does actually look like he teleports. Like when you watch the game, like he's in the middle of the field so fast. Like how did he get there? So that's like not a, with scoring down in the NFL and with defenses like being way sharper in turn, we had Robert Mays on Ship Chasing. And he was just like talking about, I just thought it was super interesting. I was kind of underlining like the fact that defenses are really focused on taking away the easy buttons. And they're like doing stuff where like, you know, a running back's lined up out wide and the guy follows him out there. And so it's man coverage, but then it's not, you know, or they, like the defense gets a signal and they're looking like basically they understand what the offense is doing and the defenders then will switch their responsibility. So they kind of have the ability to react to what the offense is doing in the same way the offense is reacting to what the defense is doing. And so the offense, all the pre-snap stuff where you can figure out, you know, like Jared Goff used to with McVay in his ear, like exactly what's going to happen as soon as ball snap. They've done an incredible job of taking all that stuff away. And so if you have something that's working, you probably do just want to keep hammering it. And I think that, Maybe that's like one of the things that we're like kind of going to see more of in the next year or two before defenses get sick of that and try to take it away. But if you've got, because the other thing about this too is like these are special players. AJ Brown, I've always thought is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and like one of the things where I'm like, I don't care if he's like, oh, what, he should be the 201 and I'm taking him at the 107. Like I don't care. You can't make me care. Like I think he's awesome. I think he's as talented as any of the other wide receivers we're talking about. So,
I'm
sorry that I'm taking a guy who's like team's not going to pass enough. But like, if they do pass enough, or if he sees an uptick in target share, like I'll have no trouble getting there because he's super talented. And this offense, by the way, is also going to score a ton of points. So, you know, I think maybe, I think it's always like a big edge to be talent focused, and maybe that'll be even more important going forward, especially at the high end, like making sure we're nailing who the true like elites are, because those elites are much more likely to see an offense just run through them like Tyreek and AJ Brown are right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've heard today that the next year's draft is going to be five running backs to start, and we're returning to a 35% wide receiver one that. Target share. Back to the good old days.
It's 2005 again.
I can't wait. Zero RB is going to be so amazing. Yeah, anyone else we need to touch on before we call it a night?
No.
Anything else interesting happen?
Not. I just want to thank Pat once again for his time, man. Oh, yeah. We're waiting for there's a lot of injury news that we just don't have.
Waiting for injury news, waiting for the Chiefs and Eagles to play to see if we can get one more win in this main event, but also
I feel good. I feel good. We got Rashee Rice. Where do you think Rashee Rice goes? Which is also asking how you think he does the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it seems like he's gonna be the wide receiver one for
Patrick Mahomes Chiefs
next year. Yeah, for Patrick Mahomes. I mean,
Kelsey's getting up there.
Even if he does almost nothing, you can kind of just make a case for like fourth round based on pure hope.
I was thinking he was probably like a seventh round, like a mid seventh guy. Yeah, just because I feel like
we're not going to get that lucky. We're not going to get that. The market won't let us have that.
I think the big issue with Rashee Rice is the question is, do the Chiefs take another receiver or not? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They almost have to, but
they kind of have to. I mean, like, they've got such a. I mean, it's not even bad, dude. Like, it's like somehow worse than what you think it is in your head, right? Like, it's Justin Watson, Sky Moore, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Like these guys are only good because of Patrick Mahomes. Like, there's no case for these guys on pure talent alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. I would say I think Rashee Rice is going to be – now, obviously, this is all super speculative because we need to see how he finishes the year. But I think Rashee Rice, when drafts open, is someone that I'm going to be targeting really aggressively.
Yeah.
Because – so right now he has 2.28 yards per route run. He's only run 166 routes. But, like, if he keeps that up, even if he falls off, like, let's say he finishes at, like, 2.0 yards per route run. So it falls off a bit, but it's still like very efficient.
Right.
I just wouldn't be shocked if he was like a third round pick by the end of it all. He won't start there.
By
the end of the offseason, because he is one of those guys where it's like, who is going to say no? Like, who's going to step up and like be like, we can't draft Rashee Rice. It's just going to be a bunch of people all saying yes earlier for months.
Yeah.
And then finally, and it'll be RotoPat who eventually is like, what are we doing with Rashee Rice in the third round? But by then it'll be too late. RotoPat won't be able to stand up and change it. The hype train will be out of control at that point. It'll be too late. But
yeah,
I think he's like one of those guys where if you think like late fifth round Rashee Rice is a little nutty, like, just wait. It could get a lot more expensive than that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, on that note, I guess we call it a night because I don't have anything to say.
I mean, there's a really disgusting question in the chat, which is QJ or Tony rest of career. And I've already warned that poster that I have reported their post for abusive and harmful content.
You blocked him?
And I don't have the ability to block, but I'm hoping one of the Google guys will look at this and say, oh my goodness, we need to send a help team, or they'll send a SWAT team to his house, one or the other.
I can put him in a timeout.
I mean, you want to talk about yards per route run, like I'm gonna pull up. I think this will include today too.
Oh god, no.
I don't know. Whether to be encouraged by the fact that QJ finally had six targets, or
are you asking if you should be encouraged that he got open deep and the ball bounced off of him like in the saddest way possible? Is that your silver lining for us?
I don't know. I'm looking for something. I need something.
I think
0.70 yards per hour on this season.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I think QJ will be. God, I think it'll be like a 12th round pick.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because that's where you're just like, he's on the Chargers, dude.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Like Traylon
Burks. He drafted him in the first round, man.
Territory. Like, he didn't do what we hoped, but we still kind of are believers. Although I'm losing faith in Quentin Johnson way faster than I did in Burks or even like N'Keal Harry.
I still have faith in Burks. You can't make me lose faith. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, N'Keal Harry's another good one. That is the path we're on. It does feel very N'Keal Harry-esque. I mean, this is not what I would say for Quentin Johnston is you don't come back. If this is what we get for the rest of the year, you don't come back from this in 1 year.
No.
This is like a I'm not going to say like he's done because he had a bad rookie season, but I would be surprised if he had a breakout second season. It's the kind of thing where you're like, you need him almost to like have a promising second season in the same way you would have a promising rookie season that then you build on. Yeah. Now we could have kind of like Bateman, although this is supposed to be the breakout year we're not getting it. But like last year, he was efficient. Injury curtailed season, but that was the season where I was like, okay, hang on. He was actually really efficient when he was out there. That's good. I'm excited now. I'm ready to get hurt again. that's what I think we need with QJ.
Kind of like Devontae Parker, maybe.
That's right. He could be a Devontae Parker guy. Give us one good season. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes out of retirement.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. That's the place to end it.
Woo!
Thank you so much for joining, Pat. This was a blast.
Thank you for all your time, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, this is a lot of fun, guys. I enjoy this.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Remember to like and subscribe and check out Pat's work at Legendary Upside or on Ship Chasing. He's got must-read content over there. Remember to actually get those bets in and not just plan them. And... and then we'll talk to you next week.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.